It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. Broadcasting from overcast Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 39 degrees. They are clocking wind speeds from the west, 15 miles per hour at the airport right now. We're looking for mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day with a high near 43. Northwest winds to 30, gusting even higher tonight. We're looking for northwest winds to 40 tonight. Mostly cloudy skies tonight too, at least during the early evening. But that'll gradually clear with a low around 31 tonight, so pretty cool overnight tonight. Sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 44 and west winds to 20. Coming up on the Midday Report, there's a new podcast addressing climate change, and Kodiak is featured. ExxonMobil has transferred operating responsibility of the Point Thompson field to Hilcorp. And members of the Air National Guard at Joint Base Elmendorf detected and tracked five Russian aircraft that flew near Alaska last week. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. Democrats are working to figure out how to pay for President Biden's sprawling domestic spending agenda, as Biden is set to leave the country on Thursday for Europe. He'll meet with the Pope and French President Emmanuel Macron in Rome. NPR's Franco Ordonez reports they're among several meetings Biden will have on the sidelines of the G20 Leaders Conference, and then later in Glasgow at the UN Climate Summit.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says the trip will show, quote, in living color, how Biden's foreign policy helps the middle class. And he pushed back against criticism that Biden's credibility abroad will be hurt if he doesn't have a deal with Congress on his climate plan before the summit in Scotland.
I think you've got a sophisticated set of world leaders who understand politics in their own country and understand American democracy.
This will be Biden and Macron's first face-to-face meeting since a heated diplomatic fight over a nuclear submarine deal with Australia. But Sullivan emphasized that the United States and Europe are united and will work together to drive the agenda at the two summits. Franco Ordonez, NPR News, Washington.
Speaking from New York today, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is blaming a lack of leadership for rising global temperatures.
The clock is ticking. The emissions gap is the result of a leadership gap. But leaders can still make this a turning point to a greener future instead of a tipping point to climate catastrophe.
The UN Security Council is also discussing the situation in Sudan. Guterres says coups are becoming an epidemic, and world powers must unite to confront them. The Biden administration is considering sanctions against military leaders in Sudan and is putting aid on hold one day after the army took over in a coup. The Sudanese military says the prime minister has been allowed to return back home after his office said he was kidnapped. Social media executives were on the hot seat on Capitol Hill today. NPR's Shannon Bond reports they faced questioning from lawmakers after a Facebook whistleblower leaked documents showing the potential harms on teens' mental health.
Representatives from Snapchat, TikTok, and Google's YouTube tried to distance themselves from Facebook and Instagram, emphasizing steps their companies have taken to protect young users. But Connecticut Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal was not convinced.
Being different from Facebook is not a defense. That bar is in the gutter. It's not a defense to say that you are different.
Much of the outrage at big tech has been focused on Facebook, which is facing a barrage of criticism over leaked internal research and reports. Now, lawmakers are widening their focus to other apps even more popular with teens. Facebook and Google are among NPR's recent financial supporters. Shannon Bond, NPR News.
It's NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Today, the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center reported 25 new cases of COVID-19, for the Kodiak Island Borough. The cases were tested during a 12-day span between the 14th and the 26th of October. All cases are now classified as community spread in Kodiak. 112 cases are currently classified as active locally. There are 2 active cases currently hospitalized in Kodiak. There's a new podcast addressing climate change, and Kodiak is front and center in a recent episode. KMXT's Dylan Simard has more details.
Kodiak had a prominent role in a new podcast discussing climate change and ocean acidification. The Future Ocean podcast is produced by Dorothy Childers and hosted by KMXT veteran Maggie Wall. It tells the story of climate change and its impact on Alaska's marine health. In the most recent episode, Kodiak was featured as a model for renewable energy in Alaska. Alaska Ocean Acidification Network's director, Darcy Dugan, helped put the podcast together.
Ocean acidification is expected to happen faster and more intensively in Alaska than other parts of the world because our water is cold, and cold water holds more gas. So we are already closer to a tipping point than most places, and we need to be looking into strategies to slow down and adapt to this process.
The Future Ocean podcast has 6 episodes running just under a half hour. The first 2 deal with climate issues, but the next 4 are solution-based. Carbon pricing, cap and trade, carbon taxes, all are discussed with economists and experts. The last episode is about energy, where Kodiak's reliance on renewable hydro and wind for its electricity is highlighted by Childers.
The Kodiak utility made the commitment to replace diesel with wind and more hydropower. So there were ways that the utility found to do that that made economic sense without a carbon price. So there's lots of tools in the box.
You can listen to the Future Ocean podcast on AOOS.org under the Alaska Issues tab. You can also find it on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
ExxonMobil has agreed to transfer operating responsibility for the Point Thompson field on the North Slope to Hilcorp. Point Thompson, on the state land east of Prudhoe Bay, is a large reservoir of natural gas and gas condensate. ExxonMobil Alaska Public Affairs Manager Hans Nydig says Exxon will maintain its 60% ownership of stake in the field.
ExxonMobil remains committed to Point Thompson and will continue to have a leadership role in exploring all options to monetize its gas resources.
ExxonMobil will also maintain its ownership stake in Prudhoe Bay and the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, Nydig said. Point Thompson was the first and only North Slope field that Exxon operated. Hilcorp became the main oil field operator in the state after it bought BP's Alaska assets last year. Production of condensate from the Point Thompson field began in 2016. It travels through the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Commercial production of Point Thompson gas will depend on a large liquefied natural gas system. Nicholas Begich III has filed federal paperwork to run for Alaska's sole U.S. House seat, the same seat once held by his grandfather, Congressman Nick Begich.
What I've been hearing from Alaskans is that they're ready to look forward into the future.
Also in the race, Congressman Don Young, the only person to represent Alaska in the U.S. House since Congressman Begich disappeared on a charter flight to Juneau in 1972. Unlike his grandfather, the 44-year-old Begich is a Republican. He was chairman of Congressman Young's campaign in 2020. Begich's campaign manager for his U.S. House run is Truman Reed, who was Young's campaign manager in 2020 and worked in his congressional office. Begich says he hasn't discussed with Young the idea that the congressman would step aside and consider Begich a good successor. He calls it a possibility.
There's an eventuality here as well. I mean, at some point, you know, the congressman at 88 years old has served the state for nearly 50 years. And I think folks recognize that there's a limit to the amount of time left for him to do so.
Begich is the executive chairman of a software development company and lives in Chugiak. Young's campaign sent an email saying that the congressman is in the race to win and welcomes the challenge. Members of an Alaska Air National Guard unit at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson detected and tracked 5 Russian aircraft that flew near Alaska last week. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The Alaska Air National Guard's 176th Wing identified the Russian aircraft Thursday when they entered international airspace off Alaska. A news release issued by the wing Monday says its Air Defense Squadron continued tracking the aircraft as they flew through the Alaska Air Defense Identification Zone, then relayed that information to the North American Aerospace Defense Command, or NORAD, along with other partners, including two units at Eielson Air Force Base, the 168th Air Refueling Wing and 354th Fighter Wing. A NORAD news release says the aircraft entered the identification zone at about 6 p.m. Thursday and left about 90 minutes later. The news release didn't say from which direction the aircraft approached Alaska. The Air National Guard's news release says the 176th Air Defense Squadron surveillance and weapons teams identified the Russian aircraft with help from the J-Bear-based 611th Air Operations Center. The Russian formation included an AWACS-type reconnaissance and control plane, two jet fighters, and two long-range bombers. It's unclear whether U.S. fighters were scrambled to escort the Russian aircraft through the identification zone. That's what the Air Force did more than a dozen times last year to intercept more than 60 Russian planes that had entered the identification zone off Alaska and Canada. Observers say last week's Russian aircraft incursion was the first since January. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
The community of Adak has electricity again after issues at its power plant shut down local operations for nearly a week. City manager Leighton Lockett says two failures in the system forced the nation's westernmost city to close city offices, the school, and the local clinic for 6 days, and community members were forced to rely on small generators for power. Alaska Airlines was able to continue to fly to the remote community of about 100 people, thanks to the use of generators to power critical equipment. But the city did have to resort to manually pumping its sewage lift stations after several days. Lockett says ADAC has a single diesel powerhouse. In the days when the Navy was operating on the western Aleutian Island, there were five power plants there. But it's been more than two decades since the Pentagon shuttered the large naval air base that once housed 6,000 service members and their families. While long-term plans call for wind and hydro to be integrated into the city's grid, Lockett says it's critical to replace the current diesel system. He says he hopes the issues at the powerhouse won't be ongoing. They've been working for the last couple of years to secure funding to put a new power plant in the city hall's backyard, allowing them to have power even if something does happen to the grid. Lockett estimates it'll take another 6 to 9 months until the new plant is in place, hampered by manufacturing delays and the logistics of installing a new plant in the remote community. The federal government has filed another draft environmental impact statement for a federal oil and gas lease sale in Cook Inlet and is asking for comments from the public. It's the second time in less than a year that the feds have put out an environmental review on a potential Cook Inlet sale since the Biden administration halted the process leading up to the auction earlier this year. That pause was part of a larger executive order aimed at fighting climate change. The leasing process resumed this summer when a Louisiana district court judge ordered programs to resume in Cook Inlet and the Gulf of Mexico following a lawsuit from Alaska and several other states. The states argued that the Biden administration's decision was bad for economic development and that the feds bypassed the public process when they hit pause on the sales. The potential auction includes 224 blocks across 1 million acres in Cook Inlet from the southern end of Calgon Island down to Augustine Island. The department can still decide to cancel a lease sale after an environmental impact statement is filed. The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, which oversees the offshore leasing program, canceled sales in 2006, 2008, and 2010 in Cook Inlet due to a lack of industry interest. BOEM is accepting public comments on its environmental impact statement starting October 29th, and it's going through December 13th. The department is also holding three virtual public hearings next month. Yakutat's Village Corporation has gotten big into the logging business, and some residents are protesting as timber crews prepare to cut in sensitive areas. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, it's rekindling debate between shareholders concerned about the Southeast Alaska community's cultural and ecological resources and executives who say they're beholden to the corporation's bottom line.
Yakutat's mayor is Cindy Bremner. She also used to run the local village corporation and serve on its board of directors. Since 2015, she's only been involved as a shareholder. And a couple years back, she says she learned of the village corporation's ambitious logging plans after stumbling upon some online filings on a state website.
And then the very next day, they had their barge of equipment coming in. I was pretty sad to see that.
Yakutat Quan Inc. last filings with state financial regulators date from 2017. Back then, it said it had no plans to log any of its 20,000 acres or 30 square miles granted in the 1970s under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. But the following year, the corporation created a new subsidiary, Yak Timber, which got to work quickly. A note to shareholders this summer says that in 2 years, it made $1.8 million in logging and selling cabins and tiny homes. But that economic boost has been contentious, the mayor says.
They plan on logging some of our very important cultural sacred sites, and I feel like they're doing it with no regard to those sites or how their shareholders feel.
Yak Timber needed financing to get heavy equipment for its crews. Since 2019, it's borrowed at least $7 million, according to documents and statements to shareholders who are told the debt's necessary to carry the corporation until more timber is sold. The village corporation's fish plant and timber rights on some of its land has been used as collateral. Bremner says she's concerned that Yakutat's forest land is being sold too quickly to finance the venture.
They've leveraged the resources on our land to be able to do this. And I mean, yes, there's a board of directors that directs CEO of the company. Most of those board of directors don't even live here anymore and don't have to see the devastation of clear-cut logging every day like we do.
Talk to another Bremner and you'll get a different view.
Yes, we are related. Everybody in Yakutat's related.
Don Bremner is president of both the Village Corporation and its timber subsidiary. He says the long-term outlook is good.
You got to hear the rest of the story. We're a valid business making real serious business decisions, not based on perception, opinion, and without research.
He dismisses concerns about logging too quickly.
It's not a large volume, but you know the people that have concerns are folks that will always have those concerns.
His other message is don't hate the player, hate the game. Congress created for-profit corporations to enrich Native shareholders.
We're a profit-making business. And ANCSCA directed that we'd be making money off of our assets to become self-determined. If they want to go try to change ANCSCA, have at it. But it's just not going to happen because you got 12 very rich regional corporations making a lot of money off ANCSCA. So that's what we're doing, running corporations profitably.
So far, Yak Timber has brushed off the local government's opposition to this year's logging around Ophir Creek, which includes pink salmon habitat. A state fisheries biologist reported that some of the logging was too close to streams, and follow-up visits are planned for November. But the real fight brewing is over a 426-acre tract around Humpback Creek. As the name suggests, it's also known for its pink salmon, and its indigenous name comes from both the Eyak and Tlingit languages, which speaks to Yakutat's history as a crossroad of Native cultures.
This creek, which is called Humpy Creek in English, is in our language, it's Quashk, which is an Eyak name, and Kwan, which is a Tlingit name.
Judith Tehotsu Ramos is originally from Yakutat and now teaches immersive languages at University of Alaska Southeast in Juneau.
The Humpy Creek itself, you know, has a lot of significance in our oral history. So people are, you know, were kind of taken aback when they saw the plans. Nobody knew that they were going to be harvesting in that area.
The debate over logging for cash versus conserving cultural resources is a common friction that arises from ANCSA's legacy over the past half century. State agencies work hand in hand to help for-profit Native corporations realize the commercial value of natural resources. In Yakutat, that's despite sustained opposition from tribal governments, both locally and the wider region, which have passed resolutions in opposition. Good-paying jobs in Yakutat are scarce in a community that's losing population. So the promise of timber jobs and cash dividends does resonate, says Yakutat's mayor, Cindy Bremner.
Has it been good for the local economy and putting people to work and contributing to payroll taxes and, you know, just money in the community? Yes. Do I like that? Yes, I do. I don't like the way they're doing it. Like I said, they could have come up with a 20-year sustainable plan that wouldn't have required clear-cutting, and more people could have gotten on board with something like that.
There's a great reckoning coming to Yakutat. Successive shareholder meetings have been canceled this year. The corporation says it's due to COVID-19, but others suspect it's due to rising anger over clear cuts near town. But a date has been announced. On November 20th, Yakutat Kwan will hold its annual shareholder meeting and elect its board of directors. It could be a referendum on Yakutat's satisfaction with the last few years of commercial logging. But the meeting will only be open to shareholders, many of whom make their homes elsewhere. For Coast Alaska, I'm Jacob Resnick in Juneau.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Governor Dunleavy talks bycatch while others say nothing. More after this.
This radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
Concerns over bycatch of salmon, halibut, and crab in the Bering Sea are dominating fishery discussions among all Alaska user groups. Alaska's current crop of elected officials and those running for office have remained silent on the issue. Governor Mike Dunleavy is so far the only one to share thoughts on the Alaska Outdoor podcast with Caleb Martin, saying bycatch is on the front burner with his administration.
We need to get some answers so we can better understand this and better respond to what's happening. But it's certainly a serious issue that is getting our full attention.
Dunleavy said a whole host of reasons need to be considered far beyond the Bering Sea.
Some of the fishing issues in South Central Alaska or other parts of Alaska, that it could be pike, it could be beaver dams, it could be, for example, in the Matsu, it could be culverts, it could be bycatch, it could be changes in the temperature in the water. It could be the changes in the food supply in the oceans. It could be other types of high seas, water issues or quality issues, feed issues. And so I think we have to look at everything to really approach this from a scientific perspective.
Canada took tough regulatory steps to reduce bycatch by 90% in a single year. Might Alaska do the same?
That's being discussed as well as a whole host of other issues, because, again, we want to make sure that we're not missing anything as we go through these studies. We want to make sure that we don't overlook something.
Martin asked if the state of Alaska commented on reducing Bering Sea halibut bycatch by the October 25th deadline.
I have no doubt that our fish folks, starting with our commissioner and the individuals that work for the state of Alaska in our fish and game department, will be having discussions and comments on the issues.
Find links to the Dunleavy podcast at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Chemai, the Shunek tribe is hosting a virtual Alutiiq Nation Festival Friday, November 19th and Saturday, November 20th. Learn to say Chemai, craft with Alutiiq artists, and connect with community. There will be a variety of language and art classes to sign up for, including embroidery, beading, carving, skin sewing, salve making, and more. Registration is now open at shunek.org or find the forum on the Shunek Facebook page. Class sizes are limited and registration is first come, first serve. Registration closes October 31st and preference will be given to members of the Alutiiq Sukhbiak Nation. This message is brought to you by the Shunek Tribe of Kodiak and the Administration of Native Americans. Kuyana!
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 26th day of October, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 9:10. It will set again at 6:35. That will give us 9 hours and 25 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 46 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 14, set in 1985, and our record high was 53, set in 1929 and 1978. Currently 39 degrees, northwest 20, gusting to 30 out at the airport right now, and that holds with what the Weather Service is saying. They're calling for northwest winds to 30, gusting to 40 tonight. Mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day today with a high near 43. Mostly cloudy for the early evening tonight, gradually clearing with a low of 31 tonight, so pretty nippy tonight. Sunny skies tomorrow with a high of 44, west winds to 20. We're also looking for partly sunny skies on Thursday. We have a high tide coming up. We just had a low tide at 11:22 here on the east side. Our next high tide will be at 5:29 and will be 8.2 feet, followed by a low tide at 12:32 a.m. after midnight of 1.3 feet. Our morning high tide here on the east side will be at 7:20 tomorrow morning and be 5.8 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:55 this afternoon and be 12.3 feet in Larsen Bay. That'll be followed by a low tide at 12:49 a.m. of 1.8 feet, and your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 9:27 a.m. and be 9.9 feet. Mariners, we do have some windy conditions. Gale warnings through tonight for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, and a gale warning through tonight for the Shelikof Strait as well. From Marmot Island to Sitkanak, northwest 35 right now and seas to 13 feet. For tomorrow, west 25, seas to 10 feet. Over in the Shelikof, gale warning through tonight as well. Northwest 35, seas to 9 feet right now. For tonight in the Shelikof, northwest 40, becoming west 30 after midnight, seas to 9 feet. Should come down to 6 feet after midnight. For tomorrow in the Shelikof, west 20, seas to 4 feet. Well, don't forget Friday, this coming up Friday, is KMXT's Pumpkin Parade. It's happening from 5 to 7 p.m. It's very simple. You decorate your pumpkin and drop it off right here at KMXT anytime all day Friday, but hopefully between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. We'll put it in the lineup, and then between 5 and 7 p.m., get in the car with your family and snacks and drive by to see all the beautiful and or scary pumpkins. You start the route on the Razanoff side at the high school parking lot, and then just drive down Egan Way towards the library. Give us a call at 486-3181 if you have questions, and bring your pumpkin on Friday. Parks and Recreation District Advisory Board will hold a meeting today. That is happening right now, actually, at the Baranoff Park office. It started at 12 p.m. The meeting is open to the public, and if you hurry, you can make the last part. The Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center is having their annual membership meeting. That's happening at 6 to 7 p.m. tonight. It's happening on Zoom, and everyone in the community is invited and welcome. Just email outreach at kwrcc.org or give them a call at 486-6181 if you would like to attend. The Kodiak City Council is having a work session tonight. That meeting is happening at 7:30 p.m., and they will be having a regular council meeting on Thursday, also at 7:30 p.m. For both meetings, elected officials may be participating via audio-video conferencing. Public members are encouraged to tune in right here on KMXT at 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web-streamed, and the web-streaming link and meeting packets are available at the City of Kodiak website. If you'd like printed materials or have any information that you need from the clerk, call them up at 486-8636. The Humane Society of Kodiak is having its annual meeting on Thursday. That's happening between 5:30 and 7 p.m. via video conference. For more information and a link to the meeting, visit kodiakanimalshelter.org. And the Independent Living Center is having a virtual Halloween event via Zoom for people interested in recreation/leisure activities for those experiencing disabilities. Come learn what's possible and tell them what kind of activities you'd like to be a part of. The event is Wednesday, that's tomorrow, 4 to 5 p.m. Participants are encouraged to wear a Halloween costume. Email for a link and directions by calling 907-486-0491. 486-0491.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.